You're listening to the Christian Humanist Radio Network, christianhumanist.org.
This land is your land, and this land is my land, from the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me.
Hello, and welcome to episode 12 of the City of Man podcast, where two evangelical political theorists, a conservative and a progressive, talk about the politics of the day. I'm Coyle Neal, assistant professor of political science at Southwest Baptist University in Bolivar, Missouri. Joining me is Ed Song, an associate professor of philosophy at Westmont College in Santa Barbara, California. How are you doing, Ed? How are things out west?
Things are good. Glad to... I'm not a huge television watcher. And so last week watching 4 days of the RNC and then this week watching 4 days of the DNC has been a little bit overwhelming on my eyeballs. So I'm looking forward to just lying on the couch and listening to classical music or something.
Yeah, I'm sort of a half TV watcher. You know, the wife and I tend to watch seasons of TV, not all at once, just a bit at a time. But sitting down and watching 4 to 7 hours straight is unusual for me too. And usually when we watch... Well, I'd say usually when we watch that much, we never watch that much. But if we were to, it would involve a lot more explosions than either convention did. So, you know, this was not the most thrilling television.
There were some. There were those fire or those that waterfall of flame at the end of the DNC, and then all those balloons. That was kind of pyrotechnic.
It was, but you had to, you know, how many hours did you have to watch to get to that? And that gives away what we're talking about today. So last week, we talked about the 4 day celebration of Donald Trump, slash dumpster fire in Cleveland. Today we're talking about the election cycle's sole actual party convention. And we know that because it came complete with protests and riots. The Democratic National Convention that met, in Philadelphia, where Hillary Clinton was coronated as the Democratic nominee for president, along with, what's his name, Virginia Mike Pence. Tim Kaine, right? Tim Kaine from Virginia is the vice presidential nominee. Ed, how much of it did you actually watch?
I watched every night of the convention. You and I were talking. I was afraid I was going to miss Wednesday night's bit because I was flying back to Santa Barbara. I was on an airplane. But... thanks to the wonders of modern technology, I actually watched it on the airplane. Watched a good bit more than I might have otherwise. But I saw all of the major speeches on every day of the convention. I didn't necessarily see all of the minor speakers in the warm-up to some of those events. But yeah, I watched a good chunk of it. And you?
Well, I didn't watch all of it. So I'd watched all of the Republican convention. I didn't get to see all of this one, partially because a couple of nights this week, my wife had something that I had to go to. I'm trying to think, one of those chick things that women are always doing, quilting circle or ultrasound or something. I don't know what it was. I wasn't really paying attention. But so I missed like the first.
You know, there's a big difference between a quilting circle and an ultrasound. If you're getting this,
you know, women are always doing these crazy things, and I've given up trying to figure out.
Do you not go to the ultrasound appointments?
No, I do go to the ultrasound. It was an ultrasound.
Because if you don't go to that coil, you are a bad husband and father.
In fairness, we have a toddler, so I think I was home with the toddler would be a legitimate reason not to go.
That might be, but I think you should take the toddler to meet his new baby brother.
We did. We took the toddler with us, which maybe we will talk about costs of ultrasound when we get around to doing our healthcare episode, because they're insane. Where how did we get on ultrasound?
That's
right.
So
I missed the first bits of. Yeah, because
we'll
that's
that later.
That's cheaper. I missed the first bit of basically every night, not because we were ultrasounding every night, but because we had something going on every night. But I still saw the keynote, and I think I saw most of Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And I got to say, some of the minor speeches you missed out on quite a bit. So if you didn't see Martin O'Malley's speech, it was fantastic.
You know, I didn't see his speech. That's what everybody said. You particularly were singing Martin O'Malley's praise. His performance in the debates was extremely forgettable, but I want to go back and watch his speech.
Yeah, I mean, he never actually said you Democrats are morons for not, you know, picking me because I would be a shoo-in. But that was the undercurrent of everything he was saying, even as he was doing his job and, you know, praising Hillary and so on. But yeah, it was really, really, really well done. And honestly, he looked more comfortable than he ever looked in any of the debates. So it may have just been that they let him take his jacket off and sort of walk around a little bit.
He was as bad as a person can be during the debates.
Yeah, which is unfortunate. I mean, I lived in Maryland when he was governor, and he was a fantastic governor.
Uh-huh.
People rag on him for the condition of Baltimore. And I've never lived in Baltimore, and I don't know as much about that. But as a governor of Maryland, he did a great job. So mm-hmm. I would have voted for Martin O'Malley had the Democrats picked him. And that's a good way to sort of lead into the convention itself. Just for a quick overview, for those who didn't see it, like the Republicans, they had a different theme every night. Unlike the Republicans, that different theme was not the candidate all of the time, although obviously the candidate is there. So Monday night, they focused on unity, particularly on kind of reviving the base. And they dealt with the Bernie Sanders issue Monday. So the idea was Monday is kind of a chance for the Bernie people to burn themselves out a little bit and to get some of that out of their system.
Yeah.
Big moments. Bernie's speech, of course, was a big one. He actually was not the keynote speaker. Nor was Michelle Obama, who by most accounts gave the best speech of the convention. I would contest that a little bit, although it was certainly an excellent speech. The keynote was Elizabeth Warren, who gave a very good speech. It was a good sort of, hey, we were for Bernie, but now Hillary is the nominee, so we all need to stand behind her for all of these reasons. Cory Booker also gave a speech that night. Mm-hmm. It was very good, very well done. If you want sort of the laundry list of every awful thing the left believes about public policy, this is the night speeches to watch. So particularly Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, if you want kind of the combined platform of things that the left wants to do to the country, just watch those two back to back, and you'll basically get everything. Tuesday night was a...
Because caring about working class people and getting corporate interests out of politics are such horrible things.
By you know, quadrupling the size of government, replacing corporate interests with federal government interests, not a step forward, in my opinion.
We will save that debate for another day.
Tuesday night focused on Hillary's fight for children and families. As many people pointed out, there were no, on Monday, there were no American flags anywhere on the stage, and there were few or none visible in the crowd, although there were sort of prominently in the crowd the flags of Hamas and the Soviet Union. So Tuesday night, when they opened up, there were flags on the stage, so that, I suppose, was a notable change. The votes themselves took place, so that was when the voting went on. The keynote speaker that night was Bill Clinton. He gave a speech that was very interesting. We can talk about that if you want to. It was mostly personal. It was mostly a recollection of his life with Hillary, mm-hmm. And how much he cares about her, which raises many, many interesting questions, given that's not what most people would think about when they think about their relationship. Also, this is the first night where we get sort of professionally done video clips and performances, you know, the benefits of having sort of real celebrities and a not crazy candidate.
Yeah, we can do a little bit better than Scott Baio and the Duck Dynasty guy.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of stagecraft and presentation, and we'll talk about this too, the Democrats just blow the Republicans away, and there are reasons for that.
Who was the musical number on Tuesday night? It's just escaping me.
See, was that the... was it Alicia Keys or was that Wednesday?
Yeah, that's what it was. And she was awesome.
She was, yeah. Well, of course she was. Yeah, Alicia Keys is a fantastic performer. Yeah, so.
What did you think of the Clinton speech? I think you made a snarky comment on Facebook about it being like meandering and.
It was kind of all over the place. Although, again, it was also very, it was very personal. It was very, you know, this is my life with Hillary, and this is how I met her, and those sorts of things. Not a whole lot of policy in it, but that also wasn't the point of the speech. This yeah. night was focusing on Hillary as sort of the family woman, although that was another theme through the whole convention.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that, I mean, part of it was obviously to sort of humanize her a little bit and try to reintroduce her to the public, but also in doing that really emphasize the fact that she's always been fighting for the interests of the marginalized, right? From the moment in which he first met her, you know, she was working on issues of medical access for kids and desegregation of schools and all of that.
Sure.
And it wasn't his most barnstorming speech, but given the specific goal that he was trying to achieve, I mean, I rather liked it actually.
Yeah, it was fine. It was a fine speech. Nothing wrong with it. Again, it's more because so much of the backstory there is so public, you know, it does kind of raise interesting imagery in the minds of people who are listening. Who, you know, those you and I were both paying attention and old enough to be paying attention in the 90s to hear him sort of talk about that. One of the questions that was kind of going around Twitter was, you know, what on earth went wrong? If he really cared about her that much, how do we explain the Bill Clinton of the 1990s that you know we grew up under? Anyway, I don't have as much to say about that. It's just something that kept coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, it was really pushing the sort of marginalized people in society and the work Hillary has done, especially the special needs angle, mm-hmm. which of course you've got some great things that you can use against Trump from that. Overall, it was a very well done mix of sort of controversial stuff with things that no one could ever think are bad or wrong. Even if there were sort of ironic moments, they did have the mothers of the movement who spoke. These are mothers of guys who were shot by police. So Black Lives Matter being the movement, their mothers got up and spoke about how terrible it was that, you know, their children had died. And that was something no mother should have to go through. Apparently, no one noticed the irony of having the Planned Parenthood representative speak immediately after them. But that went on Tuesday night as well. Wednesday, the theme was working together. We have the NARAL president who did a presentation celebrating her abortion to massive applause from the audience on stage, which I didn't get to see that. I hadn't tuned in for that yet. Martin O'Malley spoke that night. Like we said, I think he killed it. He did his job, supported Hillary Clinton, and really showed that he would have been a great candidate. This was the first night we had a more of a military speech. So Hillary, for a Democrat, is sort of famously a war hawk. So they had an admiral give a speech tonight. There was some kind of ruckus going on during the admiral's speech. Some chanting of no more war, some pushback against that kind of military presence. The admiral's speech itself was excellent, nearly as devastating as the video that they showed. And then Joe Biden gave his speech as well. Biden's speech was fantastic. Mm-hmm. I would actually say his was better than Michelle Obama's, but it was also a different speech. I also think Biden is just genuinely a likable guy. Mm-hmm. He clearly cares about people more than he does any ideology. He thinks that, you know, liberalism is better for helping people. I think he's wrong about that, but you know, if you could convince him that no, conservatism is better, he does come across as the sort of person who would change his position. Mm-hmm. I think if you could just convince him of it. Again, his speech, especially his segments on Donald Trump, were fantastic. Bloomberg, the mayor of New York, former mayor of New York, gave a speech. It was very good. And then the keynote was Tim Kaine. Mm-hmm. As I think John Oliver said, Tim Kaine is, you know, he's your awkward dad. And that's like in the endearing way.
Yeah, there were all those memes about the Tim Kaine dad memes, which were kind of fun.
Right. Which that started, that was John Oliver who kicked
yeah,
that
yeah, 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 yeah,
yeah. And then after, interestingly, after the keynote speech, Barack Obama gave a speech, mm-hmm. Which is, I don't know if that's unusual or not to have someone follow your keynote, although the Democrats have done that several times across the convention. It was good. It was a fine speech. It did break precedent, I think reasonably so, but precedent is that the outgoing president does not sort of inject himself into the campaign. So he will, if he speaks at the convention, he will say, you know, party, go party, vote, you know, vote Republican, vote Democrat, vote whatever. But he won't directly attack the other candidate. Well, Obama did.
Really? That's the precedent?
Yeah. Again, the idea is you're not supposed to be, you're supposed to be on your way out. You're not supposed to be trying to hang around.
Uh-huh.
So Clinton, when he was outgoing, he did not go after George W. Bush. When George W. Bush was outgoing, he didn't even go to the convention. He came in by video, did not say anything negative about Barack Obama. This is something newish, at least since conventions have been televised. I don't know if that was a precedent prior to that. So that was Obama. And then Thursday, again, working together was the theme. This was mostly a night of nobodies, which, well, that's something you do so that the spotlight is not stolen from the candidate.
Yeah.
You don't want someone giving a better speech than the candidate that night, especially, Hillary is a good candidate in many ways. She is not a great orator. So you really don't want to have someone who's going to speak. And then she comes on and you're like, man, why isn't that other guy speaking? You know, why do I have to listen to this instead? Her speech was fine. I guess before that, there was another general, General Allen, gave a talk. Again, there was, more ruckus in the crowd, when he was speaking.
Leon Panetta had also spoke, the former, I guess he was the head of the CIA, right? And he also elicited a fair degree of,
Secretary of Defense too, I think.
And, you know, it was funny when I was watching Fox back and forth because I was sort of more interested in hearing what their take on things was going to be. And they interviewed General Allen right before his speech. And so he was sitting on set with Megyn Kelly and they were just chatting. And he was so sort of like level and calm and amiable. And in some ways, his endorsement of Hillary during that interview was like, I almost got the feeling that he didn't want it to come across as being too partisan as a former general. And I saw his speech and it was like, at first I didn't even realize that it was him giving the speech, because the speech, he was like a shouting, he was shouting and yelling. He came across as like a lunatic.
And then I didn't know, like, addressing the platoon or the,
I guess, but I mean, it wasn't just the tone of it. It was, his criticism of Trump during his interview with Megyn Kelly was like, it was pointed, but it wasn't super aggressive. And I didn't even realize it was him until the Chyron came across the bottom and it said General Allen. Like, what? But anyways, he was fiery.
Yeah, and again, not that it was a great bit of oratory, but he was into it. I mean, he was obviously... Yeah,
it was fiery.
It was. It certainly was. And then the capstone of the convention, of course, was Hillary's speech, which it was fine. I mean, it was kind of your standard leftist tripe plus some anti-Trump stuff thrown in. I don't know that I have anything to say about about her speech, other than her interpretation of the founding was an interesting one. I think I put this on Facebook.
About royalists. Yeah.
Yeah, so she was talking about, you know, this great meeting in Philadelphia, the Second Continental Congress, I assume is what she was talking about, where, you know, you have these different sides coming together, and some of them want to stay with the king, and some of them want to leave the country. And instead of fighting, they listen to each other, and they reach a compromise, shows you sort of her view of compromise is somewhat skewed, because it's not like they settled on a halfway stay with England stance, right? I mean, one side lost that debate, if that was even what was going on. But yeah, so that's the overview of the convention. Those are sort of the main speeches. Obviously not the main events, main themes. So a few issues that come out of this convention or that even go into it, because there was some big news over the weekend that we do have to talk about. Ed, why don't you grab one of those and run with it? And, what are some of those themes here?
Day one of the convention, one of the major themes rolling through the convention had to do with party unity and the discontent of the Bernie voters. And the convention certainly started with a huge bang with the release of the DNC emails. So, and it's important to distinguish the emails that were released by WikiLeaks on, was that Sunday or Monday?
It was over the weekend, but I think just barely. So I think Sunday.
Yeah. So, I think everybody agrees that it was Russian hackers. I don't know if that's worth talking about.
No.
Well, it will be in a second. Right. And it was a hack of the DNC email server. So this is a different hack than what may or may not have happened with Hillary's emails. This was Russian hackers broke into the DNC email servers. The trove of emails that they found, they forwarded on to WikiLeaks, and then WikiLeaks released a whole trove of emails showing various different DNC officials, high up officials, sort of plotting various different strategies to harm Bernie Sanders through the primary process. And that resulted in the beginning of the convention, both in terms of pre-convention meetings of delegates. What's her name? Wasserman Schultz. What's her first name? I was going to say Deborah.
Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Yeah. Debbie Wasserman Schultz had appeared at a meeting of delegates.
She's the head of the DNC.
Yeah, so she is the head of the DNC. Was the head of the DNC. Was appointed the head of the DNC by Obama. She is a congresswoman from Florida, I guess. And is also a longtime Clinton loyalist. She was a kind of a chair of some aspect of Clinton's campaign back in 2008.
Well, she is again.
And she is again. Because she was unemployed at least for a few hours. Huge controversy. She stepped down. The Bernie loyalists, this is obviously tying into this whole narrative that had been running through the primaries, that the DNC was actively working against Bernie Sanders in ways both serious and not serious. So that led to huge fury that leaked onto that first night of the convention with protests and shouting. Sanders himself had urged his followers to not disrupt the convention. They weren't listening. Those disruptions sort of lasted all 4 days of the convention, but I think they had more or less worked most of it out of their system on Monday. And aside from a few instances of shouting no TPP or anti-war sentiments of various different kind, That in some ways minimizes. I mean, there were chants throughout the whole convention, but
yeah, it was far, far more rowdy than the Republican.
Yeah, Monday was something else.
Right.
It really was something else. And I was wondering what the convention was going to be like if that lasted all 4 days. It didn't. I think a lot of people walked out. I think a lot of people stayed and didn't shout things. And from what I've read from people who were at the convention, the number of people who were disruptive on the second, third, and fourth days of the convention was extremely small. Like the people making those chants was literally a handful of people, and the vast majority of Sanders supporters had either walked out of the convention or had agreed to be to not be disruptive. But that was certainly a big issue running through all 4 days of the convention, but especially that first night. And so that leaves the big question of the extent to which Sanders supporters are going to come around and support Clinton during the election itself.
If there was anything that would have driven Bernie Sanders supporters into the arms of Donald Trump, it's probably that, right? I mean, evidence that not the candidate herself, but the party that the candidate represents actively torpedoed Bernie Sanders' campaign, which they didn't. I mean, at least from what I understand, I have not read the emails, or certainly not all of the emails. From what I understand, these were sort of mid-level staffers who were making requests to do things to shoot down the campaign that were mostly denied.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an anti-Bernie sentiment there for sure, but it's not like they were actively going out and undermining.
Yeah, so I would say that there are sort of three levels of various different complaints about the extent to which the playing field wasn't level. One of them was, I mean, it actually wasn't mid-level staffers. In some instances, the most damning things was from, I think it was like the CFO of the DNC was suggesting that they make hay over Sanders' religious convictions. And one person saying, look, it's one thing if he says he's Jewish, But if he says he's an atheist, which he really is, that's going to play really badly in my neck of the woods. I guess this guy's from the South.
Right.
So, I mean, that in some ways was the most egregious, the ugliest kind of thing that was suggested. There were other kinds of smaller things. Wasserman Schultz. I mean, most of the damning things were from other kinds of officials. There was something about her meeting with various different media representatives to sort of fight for the kind of coverage that was being given. But as you said, none of those things really manifested. It's not like there was any kind of anti-Semitic campaign that was being run in various southern states, or you know, or floating, trying to make hay the idea that Sanders was an atheist. Like, that never happened. That's like the first level kind of thing. The second kind of level is that people were alleging voter suppression at various different outlets. And from what I've seen, there were sort of small sorts of things, but it seems like the evidence for there being like really serious, concerted, intentional voter suppression, I don't think there's good evidence for that. I mean, it's true that people showed up at the polls and had trouble voting, but I think in most instances it was either some kind of registration problem that affected both Clinton and Sanders supporters, or people were showing up at the wrong places. The third level is that runs into the area of conspiracy theory, is that when you look at exit polling data across the country from primaries in various different states with electronic voting, okay, there is a marked gap between what the exit polling says about who voted and the way that the actual vote performed. And so in every state, so goes the conspiracy theory, in which there was primaries with electronic voting, Clinton outpaces what the exit polling data says should happen by sort of like regular percentages. And then the argument goes, all those voting machines were made by this one particular company who are very prominent Clinton supporters, and the suggestion that she was actually tampering with the electronic voting machines. So that's like a third level that drifts into the arena of conspiracy. I mean, the things that I think actually happened, as you say, were sort of pretty grotesque, but had no manifest outcome on the voting process. And clearly the DNC, I mean, they wanted Hillary to win. They wanted Hillary to win because a lot of them were Hillary loyalists, but they also wanted Hillary to win because they felt like she had a far greater chance of winning the election than Sanders did. And Sanders, in any case, isn't a Democrat. I mean, right. So, you know, he's an independent in Congress. He ran on for the Democratic nomination. I understand that he's still an independent, you know, so for official purposes in the Senate, he's gone back to being an independent. And so I think part of it was, look, he's not even really a Democrat anyway. But in any case, that manifested itself in real furor, especially in those first few days of the convention.
Right. It's sort of the opposite problem that the Republicans had, right? The party apparatus was clearly in favor of one of the candidates, whereas on the Republican side, they don't really care who the candidate was until he wins the primary, at which point then they're on his side because he won the primary. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. up until then, so had there been something more like that on the Republican side, maybe we wouldn't be seeing Donald Trump in the place.
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of the media story is sort of like the DNC did what the RNC should have but couldn't do, which was right. Make sure that an establishment candidate won.
The Republicans had super delegates, we'd have an established, we would have a candidate who is not a crazy person, but
probably, yeah, but there you go. And, you know, we could critique that the representativeness of that process, but anyways, and then there's this big question of who Sanders voters are going to vote for. And I've seen a variety of different things. I think one poll suggested that 90% of them said that they were going to vote for Hillary. That was but I think that poll was before the convention. And I mean, I have friends who are really, really serious Sanders supporters. Some of them were Sanders organizers in California, and they were extremely disappointed in the scandal in the convention. and still extremely passionate, but they're going to vote for Sanders. And even if they're not going to, even if those people aren't going to vote for Sanders, I'd just be shocked if very many of them at all voted for Trump.
Right. So it may be that they do not vote for Trump, but they won't be voting for Hillary either.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure there will be a percentage of those voters who won't vote for Hillary. They'll vote for Jill Stein.
Right.
Maybe they'll vote for the Libertarian candidate. Most likely they won't vote at all. But
yeah,
I think the odds of them voting for Donald J. Trump are extremely small.
I've heard floated the idea of Donald Trump sort of replacing Jill Stein on the Green Party ticket. Or not Donald Trump. Bernie Sanders replacing Jill Stein on the Bernie ticket.
Oh,
the Green Party ticket. Goodness,
I'm with you.
I'm not getting that out. I don't. He has said no to that.
Yeah.
What the Green Party has done in the past is even when someone says no, they've instructed their members to vote for him anyway.
Oh, uh-huh.
I don't think they'll do that. I think Jill Stein will sort of stay where she is. Mm-hmm. But it would be an interesting sort of shift. Chance to use him because the candidate technically. He can say no, but the party can still put forward his name.
Yeah. One, we didn't talk about – you only talked about Bernie's speech in passing. One thing – it was a good speech. I gather that it was sort of – it was mostly elements from his stump speech. I thought it was a good speech. And then one thing that I think has to be said about Sanders is that he was very much – he was loyal to the party. And his endorsement – of Hillary was not only I don't know, what's the opposite of perfunctory? It was not only not perfunctory. Maybe that's too many knots. Anyways, but like I think it was genuine, and he wasn't doing it begrudgingly. But I think it was a genuine support, and I think there's no way that he would actively seek the nomination from the Green Party, at least not in this election cycle. I think he will be a active Hillary supporter.
I am a little disappointed that he didn't conclude his speech with, so this election day, vote your conscience up and down the ballot. Like that. That's really what he needed to have done. And, he just didn't follow the Ted Cruz lead there, unfortunately.
That there are many differences between Ted Cruz and Bernie Sanders, and that would be one of them.
Although I got to say that when Hillary was speaking about him and they kept panning to him, he did not look like a happy camper. I mean, I don't know if he's ever happy anyway, but man, one of my friends on Facebook said he's not over it based on the way he was sort of glaring down at the podium.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. But in any case, when he opened his mouth in his speech, it wasn't hesitant and it wasn't begrudging. It was, we need to do this. And it wasn't even just because Trump is a madman. It's because she's going to be the best hope for carrying the ideals that we care about is Hillary.
Right. So if we want to overturn the First and Second Amendments, we really need Hillary Clinton in office. That's the goal.
Again, a topic for another day.
In fairness, Anti-Citizens United was a major, major policy position at this convention.
Yeah, I mean, especially during her keynote. Yeah, she was vociferous about that, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, the idea of free speech as being something of value is diminishing, not quite as fast as freedom of religion, but it's...
You know, that's funny because when I go to the grocery store to buy groceries and I put cash down, I thought I was paying in cash and not speech, but anyways...
We should do a Citizens United episode. I think
next time I'll buy my groceries just by talking and by offering speech and keep the green stuff in my wallet.
Yeah, well,
since they're just the same thing, apparently. Again, a topic for another day.
Right.
Oh, you might not want to talk about this because you think in talking about this we're just letting Trump win, but we should also note that in the wake of the DNC email scandal, Donald J. Trump, the official nominee of the party of Abraham Lincoln, put his own shout out, encouraging the what's the official name for Russia these days?
I think it's Russia.
It's just Russia. It's not like Russia. The People's Democratic Republic of Russia.
I have no idea.
The Russian Republic. Anyways, encouraging Russia to hack or to release whatever emails they already have of and in any case, encouraging Russia to hack and interfere with the political process in the United States.
Well, now in his defense, he might have been encouraging them to hack her private server, which she tells us has nothing, you know, political on it.
Yeah, he was specifically asking for the 30,000 emails that were deleted.
Wait, was that her State Department server, or was that her private server? Or do we not know?
Well, there was no State Department server. There was just the private server.
Oh, well then, yeah, hacking into a private citizen, which of course is still, I hate to defend Donald Trump. I think that was pretty obviously a joke. I hope it is, because I said the same thing when the, you know, hack was first released, you know, Sunday night or whatever. I was like, yeah, well, maybe we'll find out what's on those, you know, Hillary emails that disappeared. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming it was a joke. I'm assuming it wasn't actually a, we want Russia to do this. I'm giving the command because Putin and I have a, you know, handshake deal on this.
Yeah. So just a couple of things on that point. Maybe that's right. Maybe that's right. I would say one thing in Trump's case, the line between joke and genuine intention is an extremely fine line.
Sure.
That's for one thing.
And we'll know if he sticks to it. Right.
I mean, yeah. Second thing, even if something is a joke, that doesn't mean that it sort of has no consequences, you know?
Like, sure.
I don't make jokes when I'm walking through security at the airport. And there's a reason why they take those jokes really, really seriously, and they should take those jokes. Because in certain kinds of occasions, on certain kinds of topics, you do not joke about them. So even if it was a ha-ha, I'm going to thumb nut my nose at the establishment, isn't this funny? Even if that's all it was, and I'm not sure that it was all that it was, I still think that doesn't – that the reaction to that isn't just a chuckle. Oh, Donald's being Donald. Ha-ha-ha. And then last, all of this is coming against this backdrop in which Trump is more than happy to sidle up to dictators in Russia and North Korea and Iraq, expressing admiration for them.
Sure, sure.
So that kind of makes
obviously the whole affair. That does put a tint on the whole affair that can't be ignored. Again, I'm going to stick with it was a joke. It was in, you know, maybe not something that it's something I can do on, you know, social media because I'm a nobody. I'm not the Republican nominee for president. Donald Trump is. And, you know, it's not the sort of thing you ought to be doing as a public figure.
I mean, Coyle, if you did that on Facebook, I'd be like, Coyle, you can't say things like that.
Oh, I totally did that on Facebook. You might have just missed it.
The official nominee for the Republican Party can't say that.
Right.
And I don't think you should say that.
Oh, no, I'm perfectly comfortable saying that. Again, it's my point was humor.
Yeah, I mean, my point wasn't that I mean, there's a level of sarcasm that I think is bad for political discourse. I mean, this is something that I'm sensitive to because I know that my dominant tone, especially on Facebook, is to sort of to be sarcastic. And part of that is because I kind of like being funny. But I actually think that kind of sarcasm is bad for political discourse, but that is also maybe a topic for another day.
Right.
And I mean, I know I'm guilty of it. I try not to be. I'm less successful when the subject turns to Donald Trump, I have to say. But
yeah, the day I can't be sarcastic on social media is the day I shut down my accounts, particularly about politics. It's, it would just be unendurable if we couldn't. I am not the nominee for president, so I have a greater deal of flexibility. But that's actually maybe a good segue into you want to talk about the tone of the convention.
Yeah. So one of the points of discussion last time had to do with the tone of the RNC. And the thing that really, really concerned me about it was that it was so nativist and divisive and aggressive and kind of ugly. And you were anticipating the Democratic – so we were having this debate about form and content.
Right.
And you said, look, the form is going to be exactly the same. It's going to be equally divisive, but just the content is going to change. They're not going to be talking about
– well, other way around. The content will be the same. It will be much more polished and –
Yeah. I was actually thinking about the distinction –
So different.
But however you want to think about it, you thought it was just going to be the same but different at the DNC. And then I was just wondering whether having now seen the DNC, you would say the same thing.
So again, I will say, first of all, in terms of stagecraft, the DNC is clearly miles ahead of the Republican convention, partially because I assume the people in the Republican Party who would have been in charge of organizing it don't like Trump and don't care whether or not he has a good convention. So I think that's probably part of it. And part of it was
really. Do you think that? So they're like, look, let's just order 50 balloons. And,
oh yeah, I mean,
you know,
look at the difference. Even the difference between the, you know, just the display of the stages, right? Mm. The sort of yellow everything at the Republican convention, and the very well designed, well put together, like visually pleasing mm-hmm. Democrat stage. Like that alone suggests that someone at the RNC didn't care. Because it's not like you don't know. I mean, this stagecraft thing, there are entire, you know, special areas of specialization out there where you can get people to do that for you, and someone just didn't bother to do that, or they bought whatever they could find that was cheap, or, you know, again, I don't know all of the mechanics.
They went to Hobby Lobby and bought some crepe paper.
Something like that. I mean, it was clearly no effort was put into it. And in terms of
I understand that Hobby Lobby gave them a great discount, and it was just too much to turn down. So,
well, yeah, again, or maybe they bought it all from Trump. I mean,
see, that was sarcastic. Was that an ugly sarcasm?
No, that was fine.
I thought that was just anyways.
I should not be the filter here because you won't offend me. Like, so I'm not the person to ask. Like, you can pretty much say anything. I'll be like, yeah, that's funny.
Don't give me a challenge that I'm gonna take the bait for.
That's for a different episode, though. So the RNC in terms of presentation was just a train wreck. In terms of policy, there was basically, as commentators have pointed out for the past 2 weeks, there was no policy at the RNC at all, other than Donald Trump. Right? It was his person that was entirely focused on. At the Democrat convention, of course, it was much smoother. It was much more fun to watch. It was better put together. Again, they had actual celebrities doing things. It wasn't all sort of home video level stuff.
The Alicia Keys performance was like was moving to me in some ways. I was like,
it was phenomenal. The video they kept showing was really well done, although they may have shown it more than they ought to have. But the video collage of all of the celebrities singing mm-hmm. a cappella was very well mm-hmm. done. Again, so the form was much better. And of course the policies, as much as there were no policies at the RNC, the policy differences are there. But in terms of, you know, hatefulness and in terms of are there enemies out there that are going to wreck the country? Who were sort of the targets of the DNC? And again, this was presented in a much more politically correct is not the right way to say it, but a much more acceptable political way. For one thing, Hillary is a war hawk. So, of course, there was a lot of focus on those nations that we are going to get ISIS, ISIL. I'm not really sure which of those we're supposed to call it.
Mm-hmm.
That was a specific target that was brought up over and over and over, much to the chagrin mm-hmm. of many of the people in the audience. That, of course, is kind of the acceptable one to be hitting on, because I don't know anyone who's like, you know, this ISIL thing is great, and we should just embrace it. But it was still there, and it was still
though. Note, I mean, she didn't call them Islamic terrorists.
She didn't.
I don't know if that's something that you care about in particular. That's something that we've never talked about. Whether the refusal to use the language of Islamic terrorists is.
I mean, I don't care. They are Islamic terrorists, but I don't. That's not the same thing as saying that all Muslims are terrorists. But I don't. I mean, it's not like they're, you know, Quaker terrorists. So it is an accurate description, but that, again, I don't think that should be allowed to incorporate all Muslims into that. But maybe that's
well. Yeah, I mean, there's a very specific reason why they don't say it, and it's not just because they're being politically correct.
Right. I mean, there are policy reasons for that and alliance reasons and so on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Again, I think you have to ask, are they being accurate when they're not saying it?
Yeah, but like, you know, think about the IRA.
Sure.
Were they described as Roman Catholic terrorists?
I don't remember. I was like 10 when they folded up shop.
Or, you know,
if they
or like
probably should have been. Again, not because all Roman Catholics are terrorists, but is it an accurate description of them?
I mean, in some ways it is, but this isn't worth talking about. I would say no, they were never described as being Roman Catholic terrorists. They might have been described as being Irish nationalist terrorists, but they were never described as being Roman Catholic terrorists. And there's a way in which that description would be more accurate, but I would say there's also a way in which, because part of their nationalism certainly had to do with religious affinity, but there's also a way in which describing that way is hugely inaccurate, right? Because it's not like religious identity played a huge part in their nationalist identity, but in suggesting it that way, it makes it sound like there's something essential to Roman Catholic doctrine that's motivating their behavior.
Right. And that might be a different, well, and again, maybe this is a conversation for a different way. So that might be a difference between the IRA and ISIL, where you have the
And then we can have a conversation about that. And I would say, yeah, there is a kind of a difference. But then a lot of people will want to say, look, jihad means something in the Quran, and it doesn't mean what they say that it means. And I'm not, you know, there are huge complexities here, but anyways, this isn't worth talking about.
Right.
I think that whole debate about not using them being afraid to use the language of Islamic terrorists is stupid.
I don't necessarily disagree with that. But again, in terms of, you know, who are sort of the targets of the DNC, unspecified foreign nations.
So ISIS.
A second one, the banks, right? I mean, Bernie explicitly talked about breaking up the banks. Repeatedly. Of course, it probably goes without saying, infants. So, I mean, who are sort of the targets? Who are the people that are the enemies out there that are standing in the way of us, that are keeping us from our peace and prosperity and living the lives that we want to live? Well, that's sort of the big category.
So, I mean, I'll just say this, and we've never talked about the abortion issue. I didn't watch that speech.
Which one?
The Narrow director.
Right, so the Narol director who actually talked about her abortion.
Yeah, I mean, especially that one. I mean, I read about that the next day, and that makes me sort of sick to my stomach.
And yet it was celebrated at the Democratic National Convention.
Yeah, well, that's sort of the bit that made me sick to my stomach.
So I think we can say the idea of safe, legal, and rare is dead, at least on the left.
Well, so I think there's a little bit of a mistake there. I don't know that it's not the case that every single person in that hall was on their feet clapping when she made that statement. It's certainly the case that there are lots of people in the party whose primary issue is abortion rights and has what I would say is a particularly radical view of what abortion rights should look like. I don't think that's anything like a majority.
But is it now part of the platform?
I didn't read the language in the platform. But I'm pretty sure the language in the platform doesn't celebrate abortion. Like, hey, this is such a great thing in the way that it was during that particular speech. But anyways.
Well, and then, So anyway, we got the banks, we got ISIS, infants.
About that, it's not like they were saying infants are the enemy, right? It was that the right
again, because
to be able
it's
to
so
make...
much more polished, so much more clear. But what is the result of the content?
Yeah, but I'm specifically sort of talking about the tone of the convention and especially the way in which they portrayed who the enemies were. I mean, I think you can say what you could say, and you know, babies aren't the enemy. I mean, you could say that pro-life Republicans are the enemy, but I don't think they even did that. They were just sort of celebrating the right to choose.
Yeah, and so again, you'd asked who the targets were. So ISIS, the banks, infants, and then this was not talked about as much, although I suspect it will make sort of the blogosphere as we get farther and farther away. But the Democrat platform view of religious freedom has changed.
And what does it say?
And I don't have the specific language in front of me. I'm just looking to see if I can find that so I can have it. Sorry, I should have had this ready. Yeah, so the direct quote from the platform is that it supports, and this is the quote, a progressive vision of religious freedom that respects pluralism and rejects the misuse of religion to discriminate. Which, in the context of things that have been going on in our society and that we've talked about in our podcast, we can probably put people of traditional religious convictions into that category of targets of the DNC, because who are the ones that, in the minds of progressives, use religious freedom to discriminate? Well, it's people who want some level of control over their business or their church or their school or what have you. So, yeah, to answer the original question, I think the tone was very, very, very different. It was certainly much more positive in presentation. It was obvious, and obviously in some ways it was more positive in many of the themes that and specific issues that they brought up. But that's not to say that there wasn't also this undercurrent in the content of, hey, there are these people out there and we have to get them before they get us.
Okay, so I would say that there was a little bit of a jump there between the first bit that you said and the second bit that you said. And if you had said, but there are still these issues that we really care about and it's important that we win on them, I would have agreed with you. The idea that we have to get them before they get us.
Okay, that's fair. That's maybe an overstatement. Important we have to win on. Again, there is still something proactive in it, though, too. It's not just...
Oh, for sure. For sure. But like in some ways, you know, you're sort of talking about like, well, it's more polished and there's like this thin veneer of civility. And I mean, I would say that those differences, like that's not a small thing. Like the way that we talk about people, even if in some ways I'm thinking of a certain kind of a person as being an obstacle and an enemy, and the policy prescriptions that they're arguing for as being horrific. I mean, the fact that I would still be willing to not describe you that way in public language, I wouldn't think of that as being a thin veneer of decency, but as being sort of a really substantive commitment to not demonize our political enemies and to try to work out political change as smoothly and respectfully as we can. And given the divisiveness in our contemporary politics, I mean, I just think that's a huge thing.
Right. And I agree that tone matters a lot. That is just completely missing from the Republican side, particularly from Donald Trump personally. So in that sense, I agree with you. I guess I am glad that the Democrats don't come right out and say, we're going to actively use the power of government to shut down Christian bakers who won't line up with our view of homosexuality. Right.
Yeah.
I suppose it's a good thing that they don't actively say that. Doesn't change the results of the policy.
Well, you know, yeah. I mean, I would. Yeah, I get that. I mean, and they certainly think that, and they didn't necessarily describe it that way over the convention over the last 4 days.
Well, again, there's
they'll
that.
Say that. I mean, but they'll say that too.
Right.
And so we've talked about this before. My views on that are a little bit complicated, but. I mean, you can pursue – so you might disagree with that particular policy. And your disagreement with that might be particularly vociferous. But even so, like how we engage in those debates I think matters, you know.
Yeah, I'm not the sort of person who embraces Trump. Well, I don't embrace Trump at all. But I'm not the sort of person who embraces Trump because that veneer is not there. Right? That's not a good reason to embrace someone. But I also don't think we should go too far the other way and say that the veneer is the most important thing, right? So it needs to be both.
Okay, well, that's probably enough talk about all of that stuff. Maybe we should try to move to more summary remarks and think about what all of this means. You know, one question that we haven't talked about is can and should a Christian vote for Donald Trump? Do you have thoughts on that, Coyle?
Yeah. So what I'm gonna modify your question and just say who should a Christian vote for, so that we're including Trump and Hillary together.
Mm-hmm.
So what I have done in the past when I teach in the classroom, who should a Christian vote for? I generally have said Christians can sort of vote for either candidate in kind of perfectly good conscience. They're both going to have strengths. They're both going to have weaknesses. They're both, things where you can kind of line up what they're working for as a Christian, what they're not working for as a Christian. One of the things that came out at the DNC, just because so many Christians won't be used to thinking about that in terms of Democrats, one of the things that came out of the DNC is the work that Hillary has done to combat sex slavery, to fight against mm-hmm. sex slavery. Mm-hmm. It's something that she has been sort of consistently solid on for a while now, and full props to her for that. So I doubt Donald Trump cares about that at all. Of course, if you ask him in front of a camera, he will. But I mean, what has he done overall? Maybe something, but certainly nothing that I know about. So again, there are always going to be places that you can line up. This election, I am going to probably tell them you can vote for either of them with an equally bad conscience. You can kind of plug your nose and vote for either one, realizing that you are picking the lesser of two very, very equal evils, for different reasons, but they're still equal evils. And in saying that, I'm running counter to an article that went up on the Gospel Coalition that you and I were talking about mm-hmm. a little bit.
Yeah.
Did we want to mention that, or should we just
put
it up next? On one of the Gospel Coalition blogs, so not the main site, but on one of the blogs, Nick Rodriguez put up an article encouraging Christian leaders to encourage Christians to vote for Hillary Clinton. And then he included a number of reasons. I don't remember necessarily all of the details. What were they? Trump is going to be worse for the church. Every election is a choice between different evils. In this case, Trump is, the greater evil. Trump is a threat to the Republic. Trump is a threat to the unity of the church, particularly the racial unity of the church.
Mm-hmm.
Hillary Clinton, he points out, and this is a point that National Review had made, Hillary Clinton might be terrible, but she is a conventional Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
I think National Review said she is a normal evil, Trump is an abnormal evil. And then he encouraged them to vote strategically and sort of look at the different issues on the ballot and make the decision that way. And don't be a single. Basically, they're saying don't be a single issue voter.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that?
Yeah. So, I would agree with you. Any kind of real world moral decision that we make can be extraordinarily complicated.
Sure.
And I don't know that. I mean, certainly, I think there are really clear cut cases in which I would say, look, it's really, really clear you can't do that. I don't know that I could say that a Christian who votes for either candidate is doing something that is sort of morally beyond the pale. I can think of reasons that a Christian would vote for Donald Trump that I would say, I think that's crazy. I think you're doing the wrong thing, but I don't think that's beyond the pale. I mean, specifically if you're motivated sort of solely by issues over abortion, then I would be like, okay, I mean, I understand why you're doing that. So yeah, I guess I would agree with you. One that – I'll just say this, that there isn't a really clear-cut Christian thing to do in this case.
Well, actually, Witherspoon had a good article on that argued that what you ought to be doing is voting not from the perspective of who's going to win the election, but from the perspective of if you were judged solely on who you cast your vote for. Like, if that mm-hmm. were the only consideration that anyone would ever look at is not who wins, but when you check that box, what are you going to look like morally?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we could do more nuance like that instead of looking at who will actually end up in the office based on your mm-hmm. vote, but how will you look like in the act of voting for that person?
Yeah, I saw that.
Okay. Again, they didn't come out with a, therefore you must vote for one or the other, but it was an interesting way to sort of reorient the discussion.
Yeah. Can I ask you sort of two more sub questions that
sure.
spill out of that?
Sure.
I mean, they're pointing in slightly different directions. One question has to do with what do you make of those evangelical Christians that have actively supported Trump? So like Jerry Falwell Jr., for example, has actively endorsed Trump. There was that whole thing. I don't think we talked about this last week, but with James Dobson's effort to say, so James Dobson, and I can't remember where this news came out, but it was in an article. It was public. And Dobson said, in effect, Trump is a baby Christian. I know – I'm not going to tell you who it was or when it happened, but I know the person who led him to Christ. And he's a Christian. He's a baby Christian, and we need to be patient with him. What do you think of those kinds of people who are – enthusiastic is a little bit too strong, but who are sort of really active proponents of Trump?
Yeah, so Dobson has since backed off of that statement.
Oh, is that right? I didn't know that.
Yeah, so he's sort of withdrawn a little bit from that, partially because of the blowback he got from the evangelical community, mm-hmm. I suspect. And partially because, if I remember correctly, his source for that was this, what is her name? One of the prosperity gospel folks, Paula White, mm-hmm. who by no sort of traditional standard is she a Christian herself. So there was some pushback on that, and he backed off. Like you were saying, though, I understand some of that. I think it's very unwise. I think that's largely coming from the crowd of people who have sort of identified the Republican Party with Christianity, mm-hmm. and just done so wrongly. And they have done so wrongly for a very long time. I don't know that I would go so far as to say that any of them are not Christians themselves. And I don't even know that I would want to make a comment on whether or not Donald Trump is a Christian. He has publicly said that he's never asked God forgiveness for anything because he's never done anything wrong. So
has he literally said that?
He's literally said that. So in that sense, he's not a Christian, but I think the Dobson interview was after he said that. I don't remember the timeline there that well. So yeah, God can save anyone he wants to save, even Donald Trump. I also think that's mostly irrelevant. Whether or not Trump is personally a Christian has no bearing on whether or not he should be president.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the job does not require traditional holiness to do it. Which isn't to say I wouldn't like to see some of those virtues in our candidates. It is to say that's not a box you have to check in order to be a good president.
Oh, sure.
So. Yeah, my thought is that most of those folks are unwise. Now, I think the same thing about the people who are unreservedly for Hillary Clinton. Right? You have the same category of Christians on the other side of the spectrum who, maybe not so much Hillary Clinton, maybe a little more Bernie Sanders, but the same kind of thing. Like you are just as unwise if you unreservedly embrace candidates on the other side. That's not what we ought to be doing as Christians.
Okay, so a question about that. And maybe the question here turns on what you mean by unreservedly.
Right.
Are you saying that there's no person on the planet who we should unreservedly endorse in that way?
Right.
Or are you just because Christians shouldn't be in that business because we're all fallen and right? And we shouldn't put our faith in a figure or in government to solve the problem of sin?
Well, I would say all of the above, and I would include that. Well, sort of the point made in the Gospel Coalition article, we're always choosing between the lesser of evils.
Yeah, yeah. So that's fine. I mean, that still leaves it open that there could be political candidates that you're particularly excited about.
Oh, sure, sure.
Yeah, okay. I wanted to clarify.
There are people that I wish had won. There are people that on both sides that I wish had won the nomination. There are people in politics that I have a lot of respect for. But even then, I think you also have to recognize that is going to be true on the other side as well. So when I say I really like this guy because I think he's doing a good job, I should be careful not to, in my own mind, say, but when someone on the left says that about their guy, they're not being good Christians.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That my like and my policy preferences and my sort of spotting virtues that I care about in a candidate does not negate someone on the other side mm-hmm. who might be just as faithful a Christian as I am.
Mm-hmm.
Someone like Nick Rodriguez, who writes this post in favor of Hillary Clinton. He's a faithful believer. I've known him for a while. I mean, we're not like BFFs or anything, but we went to the same church for several years. He is a great guy across the board. I don't get to say he is somehow sinning by endorsing Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So does that make sense? You have to sort of hold both in mind at the same time.
I realize
that I am a partisan in my way and he's a partisan in his way. You're a partisan in your direction. all of that is okay because, you know, you can do that. That's mm-hmm. fair game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with everything. I think I more or less agree with everything that you said. And just my, like, so I think that if you were an evangelical and you voted for Donald Trump, and we could have a conversation about that, and I'd be like, okay, you know, I mean, I understand that. Sorry, the you here is like the
right.
fictional you, not you, Coyle Neal.
Right.
Anyways.
Don't worry about that. Not going to happen.
Don't show too much ankle. I want to keep the full reveal for sure, the very end of the thing. I'm so excited. Maybe I'm more excited than I should be, but don't say anything.
I won't.
The kind of endorsement from Falwell, and you know, I didn't see Dobson's retraction, but that kind of endorsement like makes me nervous. And a lot of people point to evangelical support for Donald Trump, and that like makes a lot of people really nervous. And I mean, I haven't seen what those numbers look like these days, but when you do polls, there are a lot of self-identified evangelicals who support Donald Trump. And I mean, the thing that makes me nervous about that is that I think, and I'm not saying that those people aren't Christians. Like I don't even like talking about the language. I mean, what does one mean when you say, do you mean saved or not saved? I mean, that's something I'm very uncomfortable talking about. So I'm not saying that they're not saved. Are you talking about, you know, they have a deep and rich understanding of what it is to be a follower of Jesus Christ? I mean, I guess maybe that's what it means. But, you know, like when you break down those numbers, it's clear that those so-called evangelicals, and now my hands are doing air quotes, who are supporting Trump, like when you start to break those numbers down and sort of look at figures like church attendance and things like that, that support drops precipitously. And the point that I'm getting at is that evangelical for a lot of Americans has become a kind of a marker of how to put the point in a way that's not pejorative. I was going to say nationalist identity. Well, I'll say that because I actually believe that. And that bothers me that for a lot of Americans, the Christian aspect of their identity turns into a kind of it's really a kind of American religious nationalism. And I'm not saying those people are going to hell. I'm just saying that I think that's a misunderstanding of what it is to be a follower of Jesus Christ. And like, that makes me nervous.
Well, now let me ask you then, if that makes you nervous when someone like Jerry Falwell does that, I think you're right. So I think you're right to be nervous about that. But at the Democrat convention, they had, and I'm blanking on his name, he's an African-American pastor, who basically stood up and said everything that Jerry Falwell had said about Donald Trump, except about Hillary Clinton, with, you know, sort of Jerry Falwell's conservative laundry list mm-hmm. switched out and his liberal laundry list put in. Does that also mm-hmm. make you nervous? I mean, it was exactly the same thing. It was...
Yeah, so I don't know which particular speech.
Was this Wednesday or Thursday night? I forget which. No.
And I would have to look at the content of the speech. You know, I mean, the phenomena that I'm pointing to is a kind of a conservative American religious nationalism. Like, that's a particular phenomenon that I'm pointing at that makes me nervous. Is there a parallel kind of progressive American religious nationalism? I mean, I'm sure there is, but that phenomena I think is much smaller, and I'm much less familiar with its contours. So I think that's less of a problem if it exists. I'm sure it could exist. I would have to look at a particular case. So maybe is the answer to your question, I guess. And then can I ask my second question? Or
William Barber was the gentleman's uh-huh. name, who I'd never heard of before the convention. So
did you? There's sorry, an amazing go speech last night from an African American congressman. I think from Missouri, and it was the whole "She Won't Stay Throwed" speech. Did you see that? That was pretty amazing. That was you should go watch that speech. I thought it was amazing. It was amazing. It was an amazing speech of political oratory that was certainly the most fun aspect of last night and was kind of an awesome speech.
I don't remember that.
She won't say throwed. It started with – he started telling a story about Andrew Jackson and Andrew Jackson growing up in wrestling and how he wouldn't say throwed when they were wrestling. He wouldn't say throwed. And then he talked about Jesus – and baby Jesus being raised and then growing up, and they crucified him, and they but 3 days later he came back and Jesus didn't say throwed. So it was basically sort of all about Hillary and how she doesn't quit.
Yeah, I don't remember that one.
Anyways, it was kind of amazing. Go. I mean, if you Google won't stay throwed, you'll find the video. It's kind of amazing. Anyways, so that was the first question that I wanted to get at. The second question that I wanted to get at under this general thing was how to put the point. Whether it arose out of something specific that you said, but I can't remember exactly how you put it. Like, I'll just put it this way. Is Hillary evil?
Well, theologically, yes. In political terms, I mean, no more so than I tend to think any sort of mainline liberal is evil. As again, the normal evil category there. Because she is on the side I disagree with, I'm of course going to have a category for people who I think are doing things and believing things that are bad for the country, bad for my family, bad for themselves, yeah, and so on. Just as I assume you have for conservatives. Mm-hmm. Evil is a word that I think maybe has connotations, if we're just talking politically, that I'm not mm-hmm. necessarily comfortable mm-hmm. with. Unless you're just sort of using it flippantly and then going on, or unless you're applying it to both sides.
Well, yeah, so I'm sort of using it flippantly, a little bit, but I'm sort of quoting a view of a kind of a conservative voter who thinks...
Right, so I don't think she is directly inspired by Lucifer.
Unlike certain other aspirants to the Republican Party presidential nomination.
Yeah. So no, in that sense, I don't. It doesn't mean I don't think her policies are disastrous. Yep. It doesn't mean I don't think her ideas are bad. But again, maybe normal evil is just sort of the best way to put that. Sort of,
well, yeah,
the sorts of things we would expect to see in a fallen world.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was using that tongue in cheek. I mean, I agree with it. I mean, I don't even think that we should use the language of normal evil. But the point that I'm getting at is that there's certainly conservative voters out there who see Hillary as being... Well, I mean, as you say, sort of Lucifer, they were literally demonizing her last week.
Right.
And I mean, so one interesting thing about you is that in our previous conversations, you don't seem to have unique animus towards Hillary Clinton in a way that makes you a little bit different from other conservatives, maybe even most conservatives. I don't know if you're going to disagree with that.
Well, I honestly probably have more and possibly inappropriate animus toward Donald Trump than I have towards
Hillary Clinton. Yep,
in part because he claims to be on my side. So if you claim to be on my side and it turns out that you're not, then I think there's more of an instinctive animus,
mm-hmm.
Just as if, you know, someone were to, you know, say Jim Webb had won the Democrat nomination by some miracle, I think there would be people on the left who would say, well, wait a second, this guy is not even a real liberal. Mm-hmm. I forget exactly what his more conservative policies mm-hmm. are, but he is basically a Republican in disguise, mm-hmm. and, you know, that's not okay.
A Republican in disguise is basically a Democrat these days, but anyways.
Well,
yeah, so, I mean, the thing about the Nick Rodriguez article that sort of jumped out at me is that he said she's basically a conventional Democrat. And I think that's exactly right. And in some ways, maybe you could even say of her that she's not even a conventional. I mean, she's conventional now, I guess. She's kind of a conservative Democrat. She's more hawkish than your average Democrat, and her support for the financial industry is sort of more conservative than, you know. I mean, she's certainly pro abortion rights, but. I mean, she's basically – she's a conservative – she's Bill Clinton. She's certainly to the right of Obama. And even – so Obama, I would say, is kind of a conventional Democrat. And it kind of depends on what you –
No, I would say Donald Trump's kind of a conventional Democrat, like in terms of his policy positions, as much as we know what they are.
Yeah, but
– So it's sort of the – you know, when you're – you know, someone gives you a book and says, hey, here's this, you know, this great Christian book for you to go read.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all right, you start reading it, and, you know, chapter one is about how this Trinity thing is just silly, and God is just one, and Jesus, you know, wasn't actually the Son of God.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that I think rightly should merit more of a reaction than if you're reading a book by a Muslim author.
Sure.
Going into it saying, hey, you know, this is by a Muslim author. I expect Muslims to be Muslims.
Yeah.
Of course they're going to
deny that Jesus is truly
God. Same kind of thing here. Like, my response to Donald Trump is much more visceral than my response to Hillary Clinton, because she's a Democrat, despite what you say. I'm sorry. She's a liberal Democrat, but I expect her to be.
She really isn't. I mean, Bernie Sanders is
here and there.
A liberal Democrat. Sherrod Brown is a liberal Democrat.
Bernie Sanders is not a Democrat.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, so he's a, he ran on the Democratic, for the Democratic nomination. I would say Elizabeth Warren, you know, we never talked about the whole vice president thing. I was super disappointed. I would say she's a liberal Democrat.
Right.
Hillary, I mean, she is not a liberal Democrat. She's hawkish.
I would say there are places where she's not.
Well,
but
yeah, and that like, so, I mean, attitudes towards military intervention and attitudes towards the financial industry are two really big issues. Like, those aren't small issues.
But they're still just two issues. I mean, you start talking, where is she on gay marriage? Where is she on healthcare?
Yeah.
Where is she on abortion? Where is she, I mean, you know, religious freedom and freedom of speech. And I mean, we could go down the list. She's going to be far more on the liberal side than she's going to be on the conservative side.
But when you put her in the spectrum of living Democrats, I mean, basically all Democrats agree on those issues, you know?
Right. So again, yeah, Democrats tend to be liberal.
Well, so, I mean, this is kind of an interesting thing. Like, a lot of progressives who I know, and I kind of think this, the Democratic Party isn't particularly liberal. I mean, not relative to where it was in the 50s and 60s. Well, let's say in the 60s. And it, you know, it's not where it was since Clinton, you know? And Clinton pulled the party significantly to the right. I would say that the country in general is a lot more conservative than it was 30 years ago. And that's reflective of both of the parties. And they're just certain political views that just aren't – they're not in play.
And again, I would agree in some ways and disagree. So talking economics, yeah, I'd say we're much more libertarian. I don't know if I'd say conservative, but we're more libertarian in general economically. Start talking socially, morally, I don't know how you can make that argument with a straight face.
I don't disagree with that, but I meant economically conservative.
Right. So in that one area, yes. But if you look at the whole spectrum of, you know, policies and issues and beliefs and so on, then I think you find much more on the left. But that's how on earth did we get on that?
Well, anyways, so I mean, the big point that I was getting at is whether or not you disagreed with Nick Rodriguez's contention that she's a conventional Democrat.
No, she's a conventional Democrat.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And then again, I would say that, and. You know, so there's all of that rhetoric about her being a liar, and we never really talked about the email server scandal, and we jousted over that on Facebook.
Right.
I sort of felt like it was reckless, but clearly not criminal. I don't know if that's probably not worth debating, because that's going to turn on a technical discussion about liability and stuff. But and clearly she has sort of bent the truth, let's say, on a number of different issues. But to me, I mean, all of that is objectionable to me, but that's more or less par for the course for American politicians on both sides of the aisle.
Right. So I would maybe push back a little bit and say, yeah, there is some level of maybe acceptable dishonesty coming from a politician.
Yeah.
Hillary and Bill Clinton both, I think, have an understandable tendency to lie to protect themselves when they're caught doing something they shouldn't be doing, when what they should just do is own it and say, yeah, I did that, and I shouldn't. Which so far Hillary has managed to basically dodge any punishment for whatsoever. So that, I think, is maybe beyond that sort of acceptable level of dishonesty from candidates, which isn't to say that Donald Trump is innocent of that. That's a different side of things. But again, all of that is not to say that she's evil. It's to say that she's human. It's to say that maybe that is an area where she would have been wiser to, you know, invest in practicing some honesty or disciplining herself not to give that gut instinct mm-hmm. lie in response mm-hmm. to a question. But she didn't. So, you know, that's sort of where we're at.
Okay, so why don't we chase to the big question then? And I think I should probably go first because I think your answer at least has the potential for being more interesting than my answer. And the big question is, who are you voting for? And I will just start out, and it should be no surprise, I'm voting for Hillary Clinton. I would say that I'm voting for Hillary in not a particularly begrudging way. I wouldn't say that I'm enthusiastically voting for Hillary Clinton. If I had my druthers, you know, Sanders' campaign always interested and intrigued me, and I certainly admire him in a whole bunch of different ways. But I was never, you know, a lot of the issues I think are just really, really complicated. And to be honest, I'm not exactly sure what I think about, all things considered at the end of the day, about TPP, for example. That's the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Right.
A free trade deal with a number of Pacific nations. That is a source of a great degree of passionate feelings on the part of Sanders supporters. Like the trade issue is just like infinitely complicated. The war issue, I think, is infinitely complicated. I understand Obama's strategy. It kind of makes me nervous in certain kinds of ways, but I don't. And in some ways, I think the fact that Hillary is more hawkish on how to deal with ISIS, for example, I think I like that. But again, I think those issues are just immensely complicated. But all of which to say, at the end of the day, I'm voting for Hillary. If I had my choice, I would have preferred another candidate. I would prefer Biden for one. I really like Elizabeth Warren. I really like her politics. One thing that I like about her kind of populism over Sanders is that she clearly knows what she's talking about, and she knows exactly the kinds of policy levers that she would want to pull to get us to a more level economic playing field for working class Americans. You know, so those are two people who arise in my head. You know, when Clinton chose Tim Kaine to be her vice presidential nominee, I mean, I was kind of, I guess I was all things disappointed, but I was kind of neutral on that. I mean, Tim Kaine, I think is just, he's a great guy. He's super decent. He's a serious Roman Catholic. He's spent the early part of his life doing missionary work in Honduras. He was a good mayor. He was a good governor. I think he's a good senator. He's a Virginian, so that matters in some kind of distant way for me. His support for Wall Street kind of makes me a little bit nervous. I think he's a decent dude. I was pulling hard for Elizabeth Warren. I was sure that she was going to be chosen. And then it was going to be 8 years of Clinton and then another 8 years of Elizabeth Warren. And I was just sort of like in heaven. And Elizabeth Warren would have chosen like a Southern man, and then the Southern man would have won. Because really, if Democrats put up a Southern man, they would always win.
So you want like another Jimmy Carter?
Yeah, or Bill Clinton. Like if you put up a Southern man, it's just like in the state of the political dynamics in the United States now, the Republicans would never win.
Which may be the case anyway, given what's going on. In the
but party. So, you know, and I am pro-life. That in some ways is a complicated issue that I wish I had like a totally, totally, totally worked out version of what that looks like for me. Maybe in some ways people might describe my view as being moderately pro-life. I think of myself as being pretty solidly pro-life. So all of that stuff makes me super nervous. So I'm in some ways making a moral calculation. Again, this is a subject for a different day about why that's still okay. But I am enthusiastically going to pull the lever or poke the Chad, or I guess in my case, it's a mail-in ballot. So
right.
Mail in my ballot for Hillary Clinton.
And you still vote in Louisiana?
No, it's just the way that it happens to work in my district in in Montecito and Santa Barbara. It just, for whatever reason, it's a mail-in ballot.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know why. Because people here are too wealthy to bother to get into their car and drive to the polling station.
That must be nice.
I wouldn't know, but in any case, that's how it works here. So without further ado, we move to you, Professor Coyle Neal. Who will you be voting for in November in this presidential election?
Assuming that things stay sort of like they are now.
Right? Yeah.
Assuming no, you know, if Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton have a stroke and their vice presidential candidate, you know, steps up, that might change things. But assuming that doesn't happen, I will be voting for Gary Johnson.
The Libertarian candidate.
I'll be doing it with sort of a half-plugged nose because he's not even a real libertarian. He's against religious freedom. He is on a number of issues. He's sort of wishy-washy.
Maybe you should say something just really brief about his background.
Yeah, so he was the governor of New Mexico for 8 years. Right. So he has executive experience. His running mate was the governor of Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. I think both of them were term limited out. They were both Republican governors of Democrat states, which I think, and we will do episodes on this later in the spring, but I do think some kind of government experience at high levels is necessary if you want to be president. And I think being a governor tends to be one of the best ways to get
sure.
that. A governor of a larger state, mm-hmm. Not meaning like Montana, meaning like Texas, California, Florida, those states where you actually have a bureaucracy under you. New Mexico would be close enough.
People, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, he is far and away far more mainstream candidate on the Libertarian ticket than there probably ever has been.
Yep. So that's sort of where I'm leaning right now. The Constitution Party guy, I probably have more in common with in terms of our beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
What is his name? Daryl Castle.
I've never heard that name before in my life.
Yeah. So it's the number four. So it's usually number four. I think they've inched past the Green Party. If they haven't, they're awfully close. But the man has never held office. I think he's like an attorney in Memphis. So, yeah, as much as I might agree with him on the issues, I don't think he would be a good president. So I will probably be in the Johnson Weld direction.
Okay. Which leads us to a kind of a secondary question. Then what do you think? So that's who you're going to vote for. What do you hope will be the outcome in November?
Well, and we're assuming that you hope Hillary wins since you're sort of
voting for her. I hope she wins.
So the ideal outcome is that there will be enough third party votes for either Johnson or for, you know, Bernie write-ins or whatever it takes to tank the Electoral College so that the House of Representatives has to pick, which hasn't happened since like 1824. But so the House of Representatives has to pick and that they have the guts to pick someone who is not Donald Trump. So that's what I'm hoping for. That's my ideal outcome.
So it would be the House of Representatives. They would choose a Republican. Once you hit that stage,
I'm very comfortable. So long as they don't pick Trump or Hillary, I'm basically willing to say, you know what? You have a lot of people out there you could pick from that I would be very comfortable with.
Okay.
So pick one of them.
Okay. Well, so just for fun, who do you hope would ascend to the presidency on that scenario? If you could just – and so your dream scenario, you can just anoint the person who's going to be president of all
so
the people.
So originally, way back in the day of the people who had originally been running for office, I was a Scott Walker fan.
Mm-hmm.
He obviously dropped out very early. I'd be fine with him, obviously. Rubio, I came to like even as poorly as he ran his campaign. He was the one that I thought was sort of talking the most sense. Jeb Bush, I think, was always a little underrated. Again, governor of a big state, fairly conservative. He'd be fine. In terms of sort of realistic people that they could pick who would be generally acceptable, probably Kasich. So I think he would probably be the one that the House could pick that would be palatable both to Republicans and Democrats and to the American people.
You know, I really don't think that scenario is going to happen.
I don't think it will either, but
how does the procedure work? How many votes do you need to get in order to?
You need a majority of votes. Each state gets one vote in the House.
Oh, is
so
that right?
The delegation has to just, you know, if California has, what, 53, congressmen. They have to figure out how they're going to vote amongst themselves.
Okay, so there are 50 votes in play.
Yep, you need 26 to win.
And that's it.
That's what.
Okay,
you
need. Okay, so Republicans wouldn't need any. They don't need Democrats. They.
But you do need
a bare majority. So it can't just be you have more majority. You have more votes than anybody else. You actually need to get to 26.
Yeah, you got to have 26. And if you don't, then the House has to vote again, and the House has to keep voting
until they get somebody with 26.
And we'll talk about this again when we get closer to the election. And then the Senate picks the vice president. So that's.
Oh, really? Is that how it works?
You need 26 votes. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So that's what I'm hoping for, in terms of, you know, how do we pray for our nation? That is what I tend to think is the best, the ideal outcome. But
how likely do you think that scenario is?
I'd say 5 to 10% chance of happening. Part of it depends on whether or not they let Johnson into the debates. And he's sort of hovering right.
Yeah, he needs 15%, I think.
And he just hit 12%, I think. So if he gets into the debates, I think it is more likely.
Mm-hmm.
If he doesn't, then people just won't think to vote that way. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it depends on whether or not the Bernie or bust crowd manages to get sort of a ground campaign going. That would be another factor.
Yeah, Jill Stein of the Green Party, who I should just say is totally unpalatable to me.
I know nothing about her at all.
She's been making a play for Sanders voters, so who knows what's going to happen there. I do not think that Sanders will – he's going to support Hillary to the end. Okay. And, you know, there's a little bit of a danger in this election cycle for saying that could never happen because you really – I mean, yeah, maybe – I would agree with you, 5 to 10% right now, but like – if there was some concerted movement, especially on – I mean, I don't think Sanders voters are going to move it. It's going to have to be Republican voters coalescing on Johnson, basically.
But Republican voters, that wouldn't be enough. You have to have both sides.
Like chipping in.
The Democrats have so many states locked up, basically.
Yeah.
It would have to be both.
Yeah, I just don't think that's going to happen. Okay. And so if I could push you a little bit, assuming that doesn't happen – are you going to be – you're going to be depressed when you wake up on Wednesday morning and is it the first Tuesday of November?
Yep.
So the first Wednesday –
no, it's the second Tuesday.
Sorry, so the second Wednesday of November when you wake up in the morning, I expect you're going to be unhappy either way.
Yeah, regardless of the outcome.
Are you going to be more unhappy if Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump is the – or it's six of this, half a dozen of the other for you.
It is, and it goes back and forth. I think Hillary would be a better president sort of overall in terms of her ability to actually do the job.
Yeah.
I think Donald Trump is, if he ends up in that office, is just going to crash and burn because he has no political experience whatsoever. Business experience does not translate into political experience. With that said, if Trump wins the election, that there is a chance that Congress could, you know, actually do its job for the first time. No. I mean, and again, we'll talk about this when we get closer. But Congress is supposed to be what's leading the nation anyway.
Yeah.
So if you have someone who is so unlikable that both sides are against, that is like the one catalyst that might actually drive Congress together and make them do their job, take the reins of power back from the president. And lead the nation, in which case you've got, you know, Paul Ryan in charge, and I am totally okay with that. Paul Ryan and Mike Pence, basically,
because Donald Trump isn't even really going to be president.
Well, Mitch McConnell. It'd be Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell. And I would be completely
Well, my point is that Pence is going to be president.
Well, right. At least if the rumors are true. I don't know. I go back and forth. I'm mostly sort of settled on Hillary winning is probably technically better, but I'm still not voting for her. So,
if Joe Biden was the nominee, would you vote for Joe Biden over Gary Johnson or Donald Trump?
I probably would.
No,
I would probably vote for Joe Biden over Gary Johnson or Donald Trump. I certainly would have voted for Martin O'Malley, and I certainly would have voted for Jim Webb, but. The Democrat voters picked the technically, at least according to the polls, the least electable of their candidates. So That's what we've got to choose from.
Well, there you go. Well, with all of that said, that probably exhausts all of the things that anybody would want to listen to with regard to the Democratic National Convention.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the City of Man podcast. We are proud to be members of the Christian Humanist Radio Network. Our press liaison is Kristen Filippik. For more information about our own show or any of the other shows on the network, please visit christianhumanist.org. And please do leave us a review on iTunes. That's the best way to help people find our show. Like us on Facebook. You can find us at facebook.com/cityofmanpodcast. You can also leave us messages or contact us directly at cityofmanpodcast@gmail.com. On behalf of Ed, let me remind you to render unto Caesar things that are Caesar's and render unto God those things that are God's.
This land is your land, and this land is my land, from the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. As I went a-walking that ribbon of highway.